content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior. Sun Warrior is a premium, all-natural, raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan, plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Enviromedica, makers of Terra Flora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic formulated with a combination of spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Wild Foods, small batch superfoods from around the world. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Wild Foods was founded out of an obsession with finding the best ingredients in the world to support health and longevity. Paleo Magazine, the well-being journal and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off all their products and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
I go higher. Does everybody want to go higher? You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas, on iHeartMedia and KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. How you doing today, Ronaldo?
I'm doing all right. I'm getting tired of wearing all these masks, though. It's hard to breathe
in them. Yeah, I know. Well, and that's why I can't be there. We've had to go to the home studio because it's difficult to do a mask when you're the host. I mean, not do a mask. Yeah, do a mask and wear a mask. You can see where my mind is. Oh my gosh, a little self-care day today maybe is in order, but it's always great to do the show. It is. I'm getting used to it though. Being home, I am. This is day five. Monday, I was a little bit of a mess and maybe a little bit on Tuesday, but then things started to smooth out on Wednesday, and here we are. It's Friday, and we've got a great show lined out for you. And actually, you might want to call in today because we've got Sam Morris here and just coming up in a couple of minutes. He's the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project, and we're going to be talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with Sam, and he's an incredibly kind and awesome guy who's been basically to hell and back, and now he's here to share his story and help everyone. So you might feel inclined to call in. If you do, the number is 214-787-1190. That's 214-787-1190. And of course, today is Friday, as I said, so this is not only TGIF, it's also SPCA Day as well. I've got more Davies on the line. We're talking about grooming your pet during the pandemic. I've already been through some of this, but I can't think of anyone out there to give better advice than Maura Davies. She is the Vice President of Communications at the SPCA, that's the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals of North Texas. Their website is spca.org. Maura, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Great. It's always wonderful to talk with you. And this is a really, I'm excited about talking about this topic because so many people are asking, how can I groom my pet at home? What?
Right. I know. Me too. Well, so I've had as many as 16 dogs at once over the years. Now I'm down to 10. But some of them are big and some of them are small. Some of them have long hair and some of them have short hair. So, and typically in the winter, I groom them less than I do in the summer, of course, just because it's so cold and it's expensive too. You know, that's something that always needs to be considered, especially if you have 10. But out of my 10, 6 of them I bathe myself, and 4 of them I take to the groomers because they need a haircut. Sometimes I'll give them a bath in between a haircut, you know, if they've stepped in something or, you know, had a little mess on their rear end or something, but it can be very tricky. And so I hand groomed all my dogs, my little ones, when we did it this past week. I think I mentioned it to somewhere on the show this past week about, you know, I think it was Wednesday we groomed all the dogs that morning. Not that it matters, but, you know, this is an important subject. It is. So let's get into it. What is a good place to start when grooming your pets at home?
Yes. Well, you want to right now try to focus on a couple of things. Make sure the key for everything, though, is to make sure your pet is comfortable and healthy. Those are the two keys. So the probably the biggest thing to look out for right now is overgrown toenails. And I'll speak to both dogs and cats, because cats need their indoor kitties need their toenails clipped too. Any pet that's not running around on hard surfaces, even cats that have wonderful expansive scratching posts,
yeah,
they can need a little assistance with their nail trim. So
if they don't trim, let me ask you a quick question, because I know a lot of people wonder this, including myself. I guess I'm selfishly asking for myself. When you don't clip them, is that when they have more of a tendency to claw things, you know, and tear things up, if you don't trim them regularly?
Sometimes, yes. It kind of depends on the cat. Some cats most cats actually probably have that. They have that instinct no matter what. It's always great to have a cat tree appropriate scratching location for your cat, so they have that outlet.
Mm-hmm.
If they're scratching somewhere you don't want them to scratch, there are some kind ways to approach encouraging them to scratch in the right place and not the wrong place, you know, giving them treats, et cetera. That's a whole other thing. But yeah, it can help sometimes. I've seen it personally. I'm just speaking from personal experience. I'm not a veterinarian, not a behaviorist, but my cats that I've always had, I've trimmed their nails since I've had them, whether, you know, they were adopted as adults or as kittens, and it just makes life a little easier for all of us, especially when you do it after a while. Cats and dogs, they get used to it, and they're a little more docile about
it. Yeah.
But
well, and
just make sure whether it's an animal or cat.
Yeah. Yeah, and some animals really do, you know, get really sideways. So, you know, I always try to go super slow. Don't get impatient, you know, because they pick up on your energy. And that's another thing. So some people are really scared to do it. Like, I have friends that says, oh, no, I could never do it because my dog, I'm actually thinking of Marie Early right now, her dog Porkchop, he's got black toenails, or she does. And so she's afraid to do it herself. And they pick up on that energy, don't they?
They sure do. Absolutely, they do. And so that's a big part of it. Having treats ready and getting into it with treats to start off with is important. It's funny, but it's great. There's a hack that's been going around the internet that I wholeheartedly believe in.
Okay.
I'm not kidding you, and this is for dogs more than cats. I'm not kidding you at all. I wish I was. It's awesome. You can wrap plastic wrap around your head, especially with a bigger dog. Wrap plastic wrap around the top of your head. Don't cover your face. I'm talking like your forehead around to the back. Then take a big spoonful.
I'm confused.
Yes,
you put plastic wrap around our head.
Yep.
Okay.
The plastic wrap goes around the person's head. And then you slather a big old dollop of peanut butter right on the forehead part where the plastic wrap is. And your dog, like, smear it really thin. Your dog will spend the whole time licking the peanut butter off. And you can actually get to their nails.
I have never heard of such craziness, and I've been on the planet for a while with a lot of animals. I'm definitely going to do that. I'm going to do it tonight, and here's why: because I bathed everybody. That's why I was going into that extensive explanation about my dogs. But I haven't clipped their toenails yet, and I have a couple that are kind of weird about it. They get all wackadoodles, you know, the minute they even see the little clippers. And so I'm definitely doing the peanut butter, the plastic wrap peanut butter head thing tonight. That is, and I'll actually videotape it and I'll put it on social media. But
that will be amazing.
I'll send up my dog.
But that will be amazing. Well,
oh my gosh,
get that done first, and make sure you have the correct tool, the right nail clipper. You can always ask your veterinarian. You can call them and ask them if you have a question about what's the correct kind. There are a ton of resources that you can look to online. Beware to look for good ones. When in doubt, ask your veterinarian, but hold their feet steady, snip off just a teeny bit, especially if they're dark at a time. If you should clip a little bit and have a little blood, make sure you have something called a styptic or a cauterizer, cauterizing powder. So there are a bunch of those you can get at pet supply stores. Make sure you have that handy. It hurts a lot, so try not to. So that's a big one. So toenail clipping is one. And really quickly, the other one is fur and grooming. If pets get knots and tangles, those can get deeper and deeper as time goes by, and they can actually pull the pet's skin and cause severe injuries.
So, well, preventative is best here, isn't it? To actually, you know, get into a regular habit. If you have a dog, and they love it too, it's a great time to interact with your dog.
Yeah.
It's just once a week, set a schedule, set a time where you just comb your dog out and pet him on the head. It really settles him down. And saves money, ultimately, because
totally
dogs don't need to be bathed as often as you think if you groom them properly throughout the, you know, throughout the weeks in between, right?
True. Yep. And it's great. Like you said, it's great bonding time for dogs and cats, especially if you have a snuggler, you know, get them treats, get them motivated with that good positive reinforcement, invite them up onto your lap or next to you and get a good comfortable brush, something that's going to work best for their hair type. You can get those at your local pet supply store and folks there are going to be happy to help you pick the right one. Same with the clippers there. And then just brush your pet. If you can't clip them, brush them. It's bonding time, and those two things, if you can just focus on those, I mean, there's teeth brushing, that's important too. There's the right food, there's so much more, but just keeping your pet comfortable and healthy and safe is the key.
Well, you know, are there any general rules to cutting your dog's hair, especially around the face?
If your dog is twitchy about it and so are you, maybe just pull off for a bit.
Yeah,
that would be the biggest one.
I do think that most veterinarian offices are open, so if you wanted to drop your dog off for a quick toenail clip, I'm sure there are many veterinarians out there that can provide that service, not just your grooming. I know that Dr. Jimmy Norris on the east side of town over here in Dallas County, he's open. I've already had to go to him because we found those three puppies and had to take them. And then I had some other pet emergency in the last couple of weeks. I can't think of what it is right now, but definitely I think veterinarian offices are open.
Yep. When in doubt, call your veterinarian. There are some areas have drive-through services where you can drop your pet off and they take them in. It's like, I think pet concierge. Take advantage of that. If there's something that you're afraid of, just hold off, call your vet.
Well, and are any of the veterinarians here locally or nationwide, are they still performing spaying neutering? Because if not, we're going to have a big baby boom in the dog and cat department.
Yes, from what I understand, that yes, the SPCA of Texas, we stopped down for a bit. We are starting. We're looking at when we can start spaying and neutering feral cats. ASAP, and there are a bunch of groups here that are looking at planning a really big spay-neuterathon coming up soon. So stay tuned and look in your local area for those because, there are still, those services are still ongoing. Spaying and neutering is so important. It's the number one way to prevent pet overpopulation, needless euthanasia, and suffering of animals. So, spay and neuter your pets.
And we've come so far. We don't want to start going backwards. Can you just quickly, before we go to break, Maura, put the numbers out there for everyone who doesn't truly understand what a huge societal problem this really is?
Absolutely. The only way that every single pet in this country would have a home is that if every American from birth to 75 years old would adopt 7 pets a day, every single day of their entire lives. That number may change with the next census, but that's based on the most recent census numbers and the estimates of pets in homes. So spay-neuter today, if everyone adopted from shelters and rescues, we could get all these animals out of shelters and work on spaying and neutering the next because there are so many pets here.
Amen, sister. All right, Maura Davies, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And I encourage everyone to visit the website, spca.org. Even a $5 donation helps. So check them out and support your local SPCA. We're going to go to break. When we come back, I'm so excited. We've got Sam Morris up. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project. We're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll be right back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. Not so serious, girl, why those feet cold? We just getting started, don't you tiptoe, tiptoe. Waste time with the masterpiece, to waste time with the masterpiece. You should be rolling with me, you should be rolling with me. You're a real life fantasy, you're a real life fantasy. But you're moving so carefully, let's start living dangerously. Talk to me, baby.
Welcome back.
to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis and our very special guest today, Sam Morris. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project. He specializes in helping people slay their mental dragons. And Sam is also a certified personal development coach, certified recovery consultant, and certified health coach. His website is theunbreakableman.com. How are you doing today, Sam?
I'm good, Bernadette. How are you? Great to talk to you again.
Good. Good to talk to you again, too. And, you know, this is something that I've actually, I mean, we've touched on it before multiple times over the years, but we've never actually gone through and talked about all 12 steps of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our topic today. And so, you know, most people have heard of the 12 steps, right? And mostly associating them with Alcoholics Anonymous or AA, but this group cites that these steps are imperative. They're an imperative process necessary for addicts, all addicts, to complete in order to stay sober. Can you give us some background on the steps and how they have come to be the universal method for maintaining sobriety?
Yeah. So when you say universal method, they are in terms of AA, they are the universal method. I mean, there's other recovery modalities out there nowadays with like Recovery 2.0, Sober Curious Movement, all kinds of stuff out there. But when it comes to AA, the 12 steps are the basis of everything. Like that's how you recover. They're in order for a reason. And they actually, the way they started was in the 30s, Bill Wilson, who is the founder of AA, and Dr. Bob, who was a doctor at a hospital in Ohio, there was a thing called the Oxford Club, which was a similar thing. It was strict, it was very religious, very Christian-based, and they had 6 steps. And so Dr. Bob Bill Wilson expanded them into 12 steps, so they kind of broke it down further. And then when they were building the steps, they ended up consulting some Buddhist monks about it. They consulted J.D. Rockefeller, and they made sure that these things were these steps were holistic and very thorough. So that's how they broke down the 12 steps.
Wow. And I wonder if they did that and consulted a Buddhist, if you will, because, you know, one of my questions, and I think one of the main questions that so many people have is that does someone have to be religious in order to do these steps? What if you're agnostic? You know, does it still work as well? And what about the power of free will?
Yeah, so you do not have to be religious at all. The religion aspect, if that's what you choose as your, so they talk about a lot, you'll hear people talk about a higher power a lot. It's not that you have to be, it doesn't have to be, you know, quote unquote God or Jesus Christ, but it has to be something that is bigger than you, something that has a greater control than you. So like some people say the universe, the cosmos, spirit guide. I mean, God is an acronym a lot of people use for good orderly direction. People can use whatever they want as a guiding light, as a guiding force. And actually, if you look at the old versions of the 12 steps, in step number 3, the third step, they end it with turn our lives and our will over to the power to care of God as we understood him. So in the very early printings of the big book, that's italicized, as we understood him. And to emphasize the importance of as we understood him, and that's an individual thing, you have to change out the entire typewriter to italicize words. So it's not just like hit shift I or italicize a word. Like you have to actually take the typewriter, take out the letters, put in new letters, italicize it, take them out, and put in the regular. So it was very important to them to emphasize the importance of
how
you understand him. Yeah.
What a great story, and how interesting, you know, to hear that history. I love things like that because they give you a deeper understanding of the importance of the message, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, another thing too about the word God, when they consulted the Buddhist monks, they said the 12 steps, these are amazing, and if you look at it, they said we would just change every time you use the word God, we would change it to good. So just like a good, that was the Buddhist monk's recommendation. But so if you read the steps, like every time you see God, if you just replace it with good, it actually works. It flows perfectly.
That's an excellent idea. I love that because I feel like it's then it's more palatable to all people, from all different walks of life, and all different types of, you know, spiritual beliefs. Spirituality is very important, I think, overall for peace, whether it be Mother Nature or the Catholic Church or whatever it is. But yeah, I do think, because I think that it makes you a more humble person. It makes you a more forgiving person. And that humility takes away a lot of the entitlement, which leads to a lot of addiction when people feel somewhat entitled. But, you know, this subject is fascinating. And for people maybe just now joining, could you tell them your story, that where you come from, so they have a deeper understanding of your of why you're so passionate about this?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, my story, I started off as, like, I had a great childhood. Really loving parents, really great summer activities. We traveled a lot, but I was very, very sick. I had a lot of food allergies and severe, severe asthma, to the point where I was in the hospital. I was actually quarantined in the hospital a few times a year, like in a tent in the hospital, separated from my family and the doctors.
Wow.
And so going forward, like, I had a lot of fear and a lot of social anxiety and a lot of, you know, it was depression that I didn't recognize back then. But then when I got older, that social anxiety that I felt, I noticed that when I drank, it would go away. So then I started drinking, you know, socially at first, and then it got a little more out of control, to the point where it was completely out of control, and I was a full-blown alcoholic. And so over the years, I tried everything under the sun to control my drinking. And I always said, you know, AA never works for me. And that was the problem right there, is that AA never works for me, when in reality what it takes is 100% commitment on my part to work for my sobriety. So whether that was AA or not, or whatever it was going to be to maintain my lifestyle, to get the life that I wanted, I had to work for it. And once I shifted into that mode, you know, I stopped relying on osmosis, quote unquote, so to speak, and I stopped relying on, you know, magic bullets of, like, snap your fingers and you're sober, that kind of thing. And I started doing the work, and I got down to the bottom of the underlying issues, like peeling away the layers. And to be honest with you, the alcohol and the drugs were the first layer for me. That was a symptom for me. The biggest layer was the alcohol and the drugs. Once I really peeled away that layer, then I got down to the social anxiety, and I realized that, okay, this is why I drank. And then once the social anxiety went away, then up came the depression. And so once I peel away all these layers, the first step was to remove the biggest block for me, which was the alcohol and the drugs, completely blocking my views, completely clogging up my life, completely ruining relationships. It was ruining everything. And until I was able to remove that, then that's when the real work started. Because for me, when I got to the end of my drinking, I was done. Like, I knew in my head, and I physically knew it. I was in so much pain. My family was in so much pain. My friends had all alienated me. Like, it was really bottom of the barrel stuff. And so when I was done, like, it wasn't hard for me not to pick up a drink again. But what was hard for me was living. Like, how am I going to live without alcohol? So going through the 12 steps, there's principles behind all the 12 steps. Each step has a principle behind it. And it's like, it's hope, it's trust. And if you look at the steps, you can break them into three quadrants, three sections. And the first one is...
Well, let's wait for that. We're going to go to break. Looking for a great lead-in for that, to take a little break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. And you're listening to Sam Morris right now. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project. More coming up. We're going to break. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Take your pictures down.
Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and our special guest today is Sam Morris. We're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sam Morris is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project. He specializes in helping people slay their mental dragons. He's also a certified personal development coach, certified recovery consultant, and certified health coach. His website is themanunbreakable.com. That's themanunbreakable.com. Right before the break, we were talking with Sam about the three quadrants of the 12-step program. Can we continue from there, Sam?
Yeah, so there's three basic areas of the 12 steps. And there's principles and virtues behind every step, spiritual principles they're called. And the basic three quadrants are clean house, basically take care of the stuff that happened during the addiction or the alcoholism. Clean house, make sure you're all set. And that ends with step four, where you make a fearless and searching moral inventory, where you look at all of your stuff. And then the second one is trust in a higher power, trust the universe, trust God, trust spirit, whatever it is that you're choosing to trust. And then the third quadrant is help others.
Oh, I love that. Now, I think that's helping others, which is what you're doing now, by the way. You know, by sharing your story and being so transparent with so many people suffer with this. I mean, you know, I joke about it all the time, but I mean, I think I have an addictive personality. I know I do, but I just switch my addictions up so I'm never really completely out of control in every one area. And I have like a check system for myself, you know, and you know in your heart, I think, once you become attuned with yourself and your development as you age and go through the process of maturing, you almost innately know when something's wrong, but sometimes you run from it. Why do you think that we run from it, Sam?
It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to look at. You know, like as much pain as we're in a current situation, it's familiar to us. And so like addiction, for example, a lot of the reason people stay in addiction or in alcoholism for so long is because, honestly, it sounds terrible, but it serves them in a way. It's comfortable to them. It's comfortable to be drunk or high or, you know, and then the pain that is the current situation outweighs the pain or the unknown, the beauty of the unknown. So it's easier to stay in that place where you're, you know, at least you're in pain, but at least it's familiar. At least you know what it feels like. Whereas, like, if you take a chance and step back and look at why you're addicted to food or why you're addicted to cocaine or sex or shopping or whatever it is, that unknown is so scary to people that it's easier to stay in the current level of pain because it's manageable.
Yeah, well, and there is no such thing as comfortable growth, right?
No, not even close.
But you know, and you know, so what's the difference between, and I've got a lot of books here that I'm still reading and researching because this topic is really fascinating. One of the books that was given to me by someone while I'm researching all this is Of Course You're Angry, A Guide to Dealing with the Emotions of Substance Abuse. What does anger have to do with it?
Anger is a perpetuating emotion, right? So the more anger you get, the more it feeds itself. The more anger you get, the more reasons you find to be angry. And then the more angry, it's a constant feeder of itself. It's, you know, like a hurricane has feeder bands. Anger has feeder bands. And then once you get into that anger, you can make up anything that anybody does or anything that you do or anything that happens to you as a reason to be angry. So when people get sober, a lot of times they're angry at, you know, why did this happen to me? Why am I an alcoholic? Why do I have this disease? Why is asking all these questions of why me? Why me? And then getting angry at the universe. A lot of people come into AA angry at their God or their higher power. They come in angry at, you know, their parents. They come in, they're drinking at people. You know, a lot of times alcoholics will be angry at their family, their dad for, you know, not being there, or their mom for being overbearing, whatever it may be. But they're actually not drinking to get drunk or to have a good time or to laugh. They're drinking at their dad or at their mom or at their ex-girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
And it goes, there's a great quote about anger, and it says, anger, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Yeah, no, I love that. I don't know who said it, but I've used that before. I absolutely love that, you know, and there's so many what do I want to say, myths out there about alcoholics. And there's there's so much that we need to know about this. But, you know, you talked about the three. Let's start back with this. So the three quadrants, the three areas. Yeah. Cleaning house. What does cleaning house mean? What? Where do you start cleaning house?
So you clean the house with a, it's called a fearless and searching moral inventory, which means that you take a look deep at every situation in your life that has a resentment, a fear, something happened to you, something you did. And the basic thing about all the areas that you look at in your life, and it's really a personalized thing, as you know, you can look at all the things, but resentment and anger are one, fear is one, the way you feel about others and the way you feel about yourself. So what others have done to you and what you've done to others in your, throughout, it starts with what you did in your addiction, but it ends up being throughout your whole life. And so the bottom line thing that you have to look at about this is, what's your role in it? This is the cleaning house part. So, you know, my ex-girlfriend left me and I'm angry at her about it. So why did she leave you? What was your role in that? What did you do to make her, force her to leave, or why did she choose to leave? So you may not think on the surface that you had anything to do with it. It could have been completely caught off guard, but when you really look deeper, you know, maybe you weren't present all the time. Maybe you were on your phone too much. Maybe you just, it could be any number of things, but the bottom line is any situation, any relationship, any career, whatever has happened, you have to take ownership of your role in it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, you're so well spoken on it. I like how candid you are, and you know, you speak to people, not speak down to people. And I think that's one of the fundamental things about the 12-step program that's always been why it's had so much success, is because, and I've actually been to a meeting as a sponsor for someone, and the love, and I've said this before, and I think I've even said it to you, the love that was in that room. Uh-huh. Is an energy that is so beautiful. I can't even put it into words, but the humility, the love, the understanding, just the kindness of the people that are there. It's just somewhat exhilarating, I might even say, to see so much love in one room.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's the thing. Like when in the book, I talk about how, you know, outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that are in the meeting would not necessarily be friends or be even come across each other's paths. But within that meeting, everyone becomes one and everyone becomes the same and everyone becomes compassionate, and to have that support. And that's why, you know, like they have home groups where people go and people choose their home group, because it's a group that they get to know over years at a time, or, you know, the early sobriety and then through, you know, 3 to 5 years of sobriety and beyond. Like these people have known each other and become best friends over 20 years. And they never would have met had they not been alcoholics and then found their way to AA.
Wow, we're having such a good conversation. I'm not even watching the clock. I need to go to break again. So we're going to go to break again. But we're going to continue studying this and talking about this in the upcoming months with Sam, and just be a support on the radio, if you will, just to, you know, give deeper understanding to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sorry, I'm at home, so I got sidetracked by some random noise out there. Doing it from home, but you know, every day is a little different. Yeah. At least the dogs haven't barked, not yet, but we're going to break and we'll be right back. More coming up with Sam Morris. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project, and you're listening to One Life Radio.
Don't show up, don't come out, don't start caring about me now. Walk away, you know how.
Open up the champagne, pop. It's mine. Welcome back to My Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and I've got Sam Morris with us today. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project. You can find him at his website, themanunbreakable.com. We're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's this is such a great topic. It affects so many people, doesn't it, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you say it affects so many people, I'm sure that people are thinking about them as themselves as alcoholics. And the fact is that it affects, there's ripple effects in your whole life. You know, a lot of people isolate when they drink because they think that it's only that way they're only hurting themselves, when in reality, you know, it's a family, it's friends, it's everything.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we're talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, but all addictions do that, whether it's, you know, if you're getting, you know, stoned from the moment you get up in the morning till the moment you go to bed, if you're shopping beyond your means, where you're putting yourself in financial ruin, I mean, you know, not opening your mind to other methods of thinking, all of that can be addiction.
Yeah, that's a great one. Not opening your mind to other ideas of thinking. That one, I love that you said that because, yeah, we can get so addicted to our way. And I heard, like, the most harmful phrase in English language is, because we've always done it that way. And to live your life like that is a form of addiction. You're right.
Absolutely. Because, you're in your own little world. Nothing can touch me. I'm afraid of any kind of change. And I think that's truly at the root of why there's so much political discourse in America right now. It's either black or it's white. There is no gray.
Yeah.
And there needs to be some gray. We both sides need to open their minds and listen to one another and not be so stuck in your roots and your fear-based thinking.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think, COVID and coronavirus, I think, is a huge wake-up call for all of that.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Well, you know, I one article that I found defined the 12 steps as a guide to becoming centered as a human being. And, you know, I think everyone strives to be centered. I know I do, but addicts and non-addicts alike. So with that said, can the steps be beneficial for anyone seeking self-fulfillment and a sense of just well-being?
Absolutely. So one of the ways that as I've evolved, I looked at the steps is a sort of karmic cleansing is what it is. You know, like it really goes back, like when I said about, you know, step four is the fearless and searching moral inventory. It's really about looking at not just the alcoholic behavior, but everything that led up to it. So that being said, it applies to all of life, not just an alcoholic behavior. It applies to, you know, like it's always a good idea. The 10th step, for example, is doing a daily inventory of, you know, where was I wrong? And what did I do? What could I have done better? Did I do something that might have harmed somebody else today? And then part of it is make amends on the spot, you know, whenever possible. Mm-hmm. If you recognize that you've maybe like I actually had to do this the other day, I'll be honest. This was actually prior to Corona, but it was something happened and I was rushing around and I got out of sorts and then something didn't like go my way. And so I got really angry at I think it was a bank teller. And then I ended up, after I left, I looked back and I was like, oh, like that was all my fault. There was no reason to get mad at her. And so I actually got out of my truck and went back in the bank and said, listen, I'm sorry. I was just having a hectic morning and I let it get the best of me. And that's the 12 steps taught me that. Like, I wouldn't have done that otherwise.
Wow.
So alcoholic or not, like, it's an amazing design. It's like you said, being a centered, present, honest, kind person.
Yeah. Well, and it was very moral what you did. And it was also owning, you know, your mistake and immediately correcting it. And you mentioned that earlier, during the broadcast, what an important part that is. So, you know, let me ask you this, how important is the support group setting in regard to the 12-step process? Can someone work through the steps on their own or do what they need by themselves without a support group?
No. There's never been, I mean, people have tried it, people have done it. There's different approaches to it. Some people believe that, you know, in the sponsorship model, which is actually not something that's talked about in the big book, is the sponsorship is not mentioned. It's something that we've come to implement. But really, so let me backtrack a second. So the AA, the big book of AA, is actually classified in the Library of Congress as a textbook. So that means,
really?
Like, any textbook is, you know, is designed to be taught, and someone is designed to guide you through a textbook. So that's where sponsorship comes into play, is that it's designed for someone else that's already been through it and learned to teach you the way of the book, the way of the 12 steps and the way of sobriety. So to do it without a support group has never been successful. And the idea of having a support group, it falls into a lot of categories. You know, there's accountability. And I challenge people to not think of accountability as a bad thing. Think about accountability as love. It's self-love.
Think of it as what?
Someone else loving.
Self-love?
You enough.
Okay.
But accountability. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have that negative connotation of accountability, you know, to be accountable.
Yeah.
But accountability at its base level is a love. It's love. You know, accountability to another person, accountability to yourself. So when I say, like, the group provides accountability, it provides accountability in a sense that you've built up these relationships that you don't want to ruin. You don't want to put them in jeopardy. So that's a big part of the fellowship and the group. The support group, you go into a meeting and you learn and you listen to other people that have walked this walk before, and mm-hmm. you can't get that on your own. You can't, you know, if you spend all your time in your own head, all you're getting is recycled thoughts.
How well you explained that. It's even giving me a completely different perspective. You know, there's someone out there listening that's thinking, you know, maybe I'll give this a shot. I'm tired of living in this hell that I'm living in. You know, do you have any advice mm-hmm. for them how to begin the process of working the 12 steps?
Yeah, I do. The short answer is 100% commitment. Burning the boats, you know, the Hernan Cortez in the 1500s. He has the story about how he conquered the Aztecs and he burned the boats, so his troops didn't have anywhere to go. You can't do it halfway. You can't. It mm-hmm. just doesn't work. Anything you do halfway will get half results. And when it comes down to something like this, half results are basically zero results. And so the thing is 100% commitment, and make a decision and do it and act. And every day, daily action, daily discipline to do what it takes to play the tape forward.
Discipline.
To remember the pain. Yeah, discipline and commitment.
Oh, my gosh.
And action.
Yeah. Commitment, discipline. Discipline to me is at the very core of it too. You have to be disciplined in your life so you never let anything take you over, you know, take over your health, body, spirit, mind, none of that. You have to be disciplined. And I think so many people maybe miss that part of it. I could be mistaken myself, but I don't think people understand how important the function of discipline is in a healthy life.
Yeah, you just said it. Like, with discipline comes, discipline is freedom, and it comes from the health of the body, the health of the mind, the health of the spirit, the health of your relationships. All that freedom that comes from all that is based in discipline, daily vigilance to doing the best that you can, showing up every day, and that's just where the discipline comes in. People, go ahead.
I have to cut you off, and I don't want to because I hear the music.
okay.
Real quick, 5 seconds. Where's the website you recommend that people go who need help?
You can go to my website, or AA.org is a great website. If you just Google sobriety methods, that's great too.
Everyone, we got a split. You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.